Hello, listeners. You are listening to KGVM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio. This is Desert Oracle Radio Replay, and I'm Roxana. Well, it's finally that time of year. The season has turned. We are into autumn. And my good friends Becca and Job are here at the house stacking wood for me because my shoulders aren't so good right now. And I really appreciate their help. In a minute or so, we're going to have the latest episode of Desert Oracle Radio. It's episode number 200. The title is The Autumn Tint of Gold. And boy, this one is a fun one. I won't say more than that. And after we play that episode, we're also going to talk a little bit about some things in nature. And then we're going to have a fun one. We're going to be talking to the Bozeman Paranormal Society. I went on a ghost walk with them last night. And so I'll be playing some of that for you. So here comes the episode. Enjoy.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. And this is your temple of the night. Your temple of the night up the great highway. Turn right at the caldera, over the river and through the woods. Past the sheep herders and the old windmill. And then it's just down a couple of switchbacks headed toward the state highway. You see the great wild sagebrush plain rising up to pinyon forest. And then that magnificent crown of white granite rising up from the ancient crescent of trees. The Great Temple. The Grove of Santa Minerva. This is also the 200th episode of Desert Oracle Radio. Should have had a party or something. Where is everybody anyway? I get it. It's just me. Just me and some Landscapes of Sound by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. But by long tradition, he is somewhere else. Nobody really knows where. So we get his tracks by wire. Somehow. Or wireless. Nobody knows. It's all run on innuendo, nonverbal clues, weather conditions. What happened is he had always dreamed of going on one of those cargo freighter cruises. Where you're a passenger on a packet carrier of some kind, a smaller vessel that's running a loop with a lot of stops, island hopping. A sort of swashbuckling vacation. A foul-mouthed crew of sketchy characters from the Balkans and Trinidad. And they've all got this same tattoo. This symbol. Well, you can imagine where this is going. They liked the vibes, having Red, Blue, Black, Silver recording his music out in the open on the deck and the tropical breeze. When they'd anchor off that beautiful little lagoon with the white plastered little houses on the hillside over the narrow band of beach. Thick green forest rising up to the mountain, rising up to the volcano. Well, one morning, Red, Blue, Black, Silver wakes up, and there it is, the tattoo. None of us ever saw him again. It's for the best, I suppose. This has always been a late night radio program, and late night radio is primarily a solo endeavor. I just gotta face the truth about it all. I've been thinking about this particular episode of Desert Oracle Radio for a long time now. Because if you ever look at our website on the internet, you'll see the episodes are numbered. Joe Rogan and I came up with that together some years back at the giraffe fights. And you can't avoid being aware when a big one is coming up. 200. And then I had to miss the actual broadcast last Friday because I had to drive the usual half day to see a doctor because we have no doctors up here in the high desert where I'm at. There used to be a couple of doctors up here. Not good ones. But if he got shot or something. But now I'm here, more or less. And I bring you glad tidings because we are just a few hours from the autumn equinox. Reaching the Pacific time zone just before midnight tonight, 11:50 p.m., September 22, this autumn equinox. Maybe it has already passed if you're listening to the podcast of this radio program. But right now, is just ahead. And the autumn equinox means we are moving into the influence of the constellation of Libra. The balance of heaven, as the Babylonians called it. To see Libra, as the Romans described this constellation, look for the Big Dipper in the northwestern night sky, and then you arc to Arcturus, as they say, up at the observatory, which means you look down and to the left. Down and to the left. For Big Bright Arcturus. And then over the seemingly dead stick figure of Virgo, and Libra is just beyond, right between the claws of Scorpius. Libra often finds itself in such situations, trapped there between Scorpio and Virgo. This is why the astrological sign of Libra is a diplomatic sign. One of balance, with a focus on tranquility and beauty. God knows it takes focus. Arcturus, you may remember, means guardian of the bear. Arctos means bear. Which is the great bear in this case, the one we call Big Dipper because it likes to get in our swimming pools. It's not the brightest constellation, Libra, but you can see it clearly in the desert sky as long as you're a good ways out of town, away from the bright lights that poison our nighttime world. It looks like a set of scales, sort of. I mean, it looks more like a set of scales than that headless stick figure of Virgo looks like a maiden. The brightest stars in Libra go from the top of the scale over to the left side, and these two stars have truly fantastic names. Zubanel Janubi and Zubanesh Shamali, says the astronomy site EarthSky. The names rhyme with Obi-Wan Kenobi of Star Wars. Well, sort of, I guess. If you're charitable about the definition of the word rhymes. But they do have that rhythm, at least, or they can have that rhythm. Zubanel Janubi, Obi-Wan Kenobi. Zubanesh Shamali, Obi-Wan Shamali. The signs of autumn are more subtle in the desert, with the major change being the return of cooler, longer nights. Pretty much without fail, by the end of September, you can leave the windows open at night. In the high desert, anyway. And the coyote melons are usually ready by the autumn equinox, but ready for what? You can't really eat them, but you can carve a jack-o'-lantern in the coyote gourds, or paint on a terrible face, or just pile up a couple of loose coyote melons around your doorway to welcome friends and discourage house demons. If you live near one of our occasional sources of water, like a creek or a stream, you might have some cottonwood trees around, and these become as beautiful with their fall colors as any quaking aspen in Mono County or even the New England sugar maple. This autumn is getting off to a strange start. As here in the Mojave High Desert, there are carpets of little yellow wildflowers everywhere, thanks to the hurricane. Old Hurricane Hillary, which soaked us all pretty good a month ago. I've never had so many weeds in late September. It looks like I have to get the pygmy goats back over here for the weekend. Monsoon rains do this in other parts of our American deserts, but it's rare in the Mojave. Astrologers will tell you that your sun sign is one of many factors in a personality, and that the specifics of your birth, the geographic location, for instance, the precise time, etc., weigh more heavily than the popular sun sign horoscopes that became dominant in media in the 1930s and 1940s. Nearly a century ago. Radio played a large part in this story, especially in North America, where the radio psychics could be heard everywhere. The federal government got worried that somebody might be having some fun somewhere, so the radio psychics were banned from U.S. airwaves, but continued to have big audiences on the border blaster stations out of Mexico. During both phases of the astrology craze, on domestic radio and on the border blaster stations, and the border blasters were the stations that would later send out Wolfman Jack's rock and roll show across the nation, that kind of thing. But starting on New York City radio and then moving down to the station south of the Rio Grande was the biggest star of astrology in those days, Evangeline Adams. And along with her ghostwriter, the British occultist Aleister Crowley, Evangeline Adams did more than anybody to popularize sun sign astrology. But Adams and Crowley were equally dedicated to natal astrology regarding the position of the planets at birth, and what's called horary astrology. That's spelled H-O-R-A-R-Y, not with the W-H. And that regards the position of the planets and constellations in the present and the future. Or in the past, if you're trying to go back and figure out what the astrological conditions were like, say, for Archduke Franz Ferdinand being assassinated. That was a popular one to go back and look at. What was going on in the stars and the planets? Because we knew what was going on in the Balkans, and it was not good, ultimately. The problem with such people is that they are eventually compelled to crank out material for a hungry audience, regardless of inspiration and the availability of real prophecy. Because both inspiration and prophecy are fickle muses. So Ms. Adams is mostly remembered today for giving some very bad investment advice in the months ahead of the stock market crash of 1929. And with that disclaimer out of the way, here are some historical people born under the Libra sign. Well, there's Kublai Khan, born on the equinox of September 23 in the year 1215. Oscar Wilde, born in Dublin on October 16, 1854. John Lennon, another Irish writer, October 9, 1940. Brigitte Bardot, September 28, 1934. Chrissy Hynde says Bridget, but she's from Ohio. Lee Harvey Oswald, born in New Orleans on October 18, 1939. Vladimir Putin, October 7, 1952. Sigourney Weaver, a classic Libra, born in New York City on October 8, 1949. F. Scott Fitzgerald, September 24, 1896, in St. Paul, Minnesota, a little too close to other sign to get the full benefit of the Libra balance. Jerry Lee Lewis, September 29, 1935, I believe in Faraday, Louisiana. The killer. John Coltrane, September 23, 1926, another equinox birth in Hamlet, North Carolina. Václav Havel, born in Prague on October 5, 1936. And Jim Henson, September 24, 1936, born in Greenville, Mississippi. Ray Charles, the genius, born in Georgia on September 23rd, 1930. And finally, Aleister Crowley himself, who was born on October 12, 1875. Exactly 90 years before my own day of birth, it turns out. Autumn equinox calls for an autumn poem. But all the usual suspects are worn out with 10-year-old Twitter jokes and... You know, with the 10-year-old Twitter jokes, people are trying to act like they read poetry or they know poetry. And so they roll out this one stupid thing about, like, plums in the icebox. They need to stop. Go back to listening to video game soundtracks and ordering fast food for delivery. Let's find something different and truly appropriate. With good reason, many of us think of Edgar Allan Poe when we think about this moody season. Here's one I like that I don't see mentioned too often. From childhood's hour, I have not been as others were. I have not seen as others saw. I could not bring my passions from a common spring. From the same source I have not taken my sorrow I could not awaken my heart to joy at the same tone, and all I loved alone. my childhood in the dawn of a most stormy life was drawn. From every depth of good and ill, the mystery which binds me still. From the torrent or the fountain, from the red cliff of the mountain, from the sun that round me rolled in its autumn tent of gold, from the lightning in the sky as it passed me flying by, from the thunder and the storm, and the cloud that took the form when the rest of heaven was blue, of a demon in my view. To Zizek's and across the great Mojave wilderness, you have been listening to Desert Oracle Radio with musical soundscapes by our own Red, Blue, Black, Silver, and I am your host, Ken Lane. On Saturday night, October 20, I will be bringing Desert Oracle Radio to the spooky old ruins of the Hot Springs Bathhouse in Hukumba on the edge of the desert. Hukumba Hot Springs is east of San Diego. If you want to go, you just show up. They're going to ask you for a donation, $20, I believe. If you're running low, just act like a 10 is two 10s and just sort of wave the folded bill under the guy's eyes and he'll be looking at something else anyway. ...8 p.m. on Friday, October 20th in the prime time of the Western American Autumn. Let's see, what else? Can I say this yet? It looks like we're going to have an event in the high desert on Halloween weekend. It looks like Sunday night. I'll tell you more next week. I have to run it by the sheriff's office. Thank you, friends, for listening all over the American Southwest and beyond. You can visit our website, which I do update every week, desertoracle.com. Click Desert Oracle Radio. And good night from the voice of the desert.
Woo! Ken Lane covered a lot of turf with that one. I hope you enjoyed it. You know, when he mentioned Saint Minerva, he refers to that lady as Saint Minerva because she did a lot of work to protect crucial desert areas, specifically, I think, the Mojave. And I just wondered, have you ever thought of who we might consider our own local saints? Like, well, what comes to my mind is Doug Peacock. I could say Saint Doug is the patron saint of the Yellowstone Grizzly. I don't know. Anyway, have you been paying attention to what's going on this fall? It is hyperphagia time. and I'm going to read you a little bit of facts that I've come across about hyperphagia and the bears, and we'll even define that. If you do a search online and you put in hyperphagia, you might come up with hyperphagia in humans, which is like an insatiable desire to eat. Well, kind of bears are going through that same thing right now, because many fruits and berries are still available. Calorie-dense acorns and nuts are ripening, and bears' body clocks are ticking louder and louder. During hyperphagia, bears are like Olympic athletes in training. They must consume 10 times as many calories as they need during the spring and summer if they're going to den up in tip-top shape. And that means finding up to 20,000 calories a day or more. That's a lot of nuts and berries. So there are things you can do so the bears don't mistake your house for a food source, and by doing that get themselves in trouble.
Oh, it sounds
These
cool.
are things that are coming from the BearWise website, by the way. The article is called Bears Fall Eat-a-thon. What's on the menu at your house? And they open with mentioning that by fall, bears are foraging up to 20 hours a day in a race against the clock. And of course, as I mentioned before, this annual power eating marathon is called hyperphagia. I'm just going to breeze over a few points here, but I highly recommend that you go to this website or another one that talks about, you know, keeping your home safe for you and the bears. So the first thing they mention is barbecues. After your party is over, clean up any spills, wipe down all the surfaces, and thoroughly clean your grill, including the drip tray and grease pan. Put yummy smelling trash and leftovers in bear resistant containers or take inside. Do not leave trash, empty cans or bottles, or anything else with an odor on your porch or anywhere else bears could access it. Gardens and orchards. Harvest those fruits, nuts, and garden produce. Lots of times bears will pick up on the scent right at the time they're ripening, so you might want to pick them before they're ripe. And also pick up any fallen produce daily. Compost. So don't add pungent items such as meat, melon rinds, or sweet-smelling foods to your compost pile. Cover any food scraps with plenty of yard debris, grass clippings, and sawdust, or shredded paper to help contain odors. Bears will dig, though. I will add that. regularly turn the pile and add lime to reduce odors. Consider using a hard, durable bin with a sturdy cover you can lock, or installing an electric fence to keep bears away. Chickens, livestock, and bees. Honeybee larvae, chickens, and other small livestock, eggs, and feed all attract hungry bears. So install electric fencing and motion detecting lights around chicken coops, beehives, and livestock enclosures. Bird feeders. Okay, I do feed birds, so pay attention to this, Roxana. Resist the urge to put out your bird feeders at the first hint of fall. Bears can smell bird seed from more than a mile away. A bird feeder that holds 7 pounds of nutritious seeds delivers 18,000 calories a bear can gobble down in minutes. Natural foods for birds are widely available in the fall when plants are going to seed. Download our free bulletin, Attract Birds, Not Bears, for lots of bear-wise ideas. And then garbage. Shorter days and longer nights give bears more time to roam through neighborhoods looking for food. Use bear-resistant trash containers or keep trash inside a sturdy locked building until the morning of pickup. And pets. Feed pets indoors. If you must feed outside, remove bowls as soon as your pet is finished eating and keep the surrounding area clean. Odors from pet food can linger for hours, so be sure to check the yard before you and your pet go outside. If you have a dog, download our free Dogs and Bears Bulletin for tips on keeping dogs, bears, and people safe. And again, this is from the BearWise website. And it's that time of year that we're starting to hear the elk bugling. Actually, they've been bugling for a couple weeks now. Here's a nice Field Notes article about living with elk as neighbors.
It's time for Field Notes, brought to you by the Montana Natural History Center. I was living in a 144-square-foot treehouse with my family the first time I encountered a herd of elk. Straightening the quilt on one of the cots, I glimpsed movement through a window and rushed, barefoot, to the narrow deck to see what it was. A herd of 200 elk galloping along each rise and dip of the valley below the treehouse. The vibration of their hoofbeats flowed across the land, up through my feet, and eventually my heartbeat synchronized with it. It was the loudest, quiet sound I'd ever heard. Their long legs brushed and crushed the foliage as they ran, activating a perfume of mint, grass, wind, sage, soil, and fir needles overlaid with the scent of elk, which is not unlike that of a horse, though wilder and deeper. Treehouse living was simply a stopgap in housing for my family as we built our modest home on the same land, but it ended up being much more. Despite living in an elevated treehouse, I'd never felt more connected with the earth. Every day there was a new flower to study. A bird family made a nest in the eaves, a mini museum of rocks, shells, sticks, bark, lichen, bones, and plants sprang up on the stairs. Squirrels explored the Lego houses my kids built on the deck. But it was the elk herd that gave me something majestic to set my sights upon. From our perch in the treehouse, we watched the elk like some people watch television. A brief rainstorm would make it through the valley most afternoons, and the grasses and forbs grew to a rich blanket of emerald. The cows and calves fed on the abundant asters, daisies, dandelions, elk thistle, and grasses. Suspicious mothers were quick to turn heel, and we gave them a wide berth, changing the route of a walk or simply being quiet as we went about our day. That autumn, I kept the windows of the treehouse open so we could listen to the bulls' bugles ringing out. We had never heard anything so sonorous, urgent. Lying in our cots in the dark, I teased my kids that it wasn't elk living in our small valley of the Gallatin Mountains. It was a herd of elephants. One day we watched, rapt, two enormous bull elk, antlers locked, battling for control of a harem of females. Like the calls of the migrating Canada geese in my childhood, the elk calls helped my body understand that autumn had arrived. When an early autumn snowfall left 10 inches on the ground, the elk nestled in the fluffy snow amidst the stand of Douglas fir trees where our treehouse stood. In the morning, we tromped through the snow, noting the oval-shaped depressions in the ground. We marked it as our first elk slumber party. 2 days before the permanent winter snow fell, we moved into our home. After a week of steady unpacking, it dawned on me that the valley was quiet. The elk were absent. They'd migrated downslope to the valley grasslands where they wintered. That winter, we had winding conversations about living in tandem with the elk. Beeswax candles glowing, hot peppermint tea in hand, my family made plans. We talked about what stewardship looks like. We sketched plans to grow native plants where the soil surrounding our home had been disturbed by heavy machinery. We reached out to experts to find ways to make existing fencing in our area more wildlife friendly. We decided not to raise more fences, not to spray chemicals, not to get a dog. And then early summer arrived, and with it, the heavily pregnant cows. Slowly, we began to recognize some individuals in the herd. We watched, through binoculars, as a cow elk gave birth. When the herd made their first run down the ridge and into the valley, we raised our arms over our heads in wonder and gratitude and welcomed them home. Today's field note was written in the Master Naturalist course at the Montana Natural History Center. I'm Kelsey Turner for Field Notes, brought to you by the Montana Natural History Center. providing natural history education for schools and the public throughout Montana. For information on upcoming events and programs at the center, call 406-327-0405 or visit our website at montananaturalist.org.
Well, Friday night was a nice rainy night and a perfect night to go on a ghost tour with the Bozeman Paranormal Society. They have an event coming up next week, and I'm going to let Elise, the leader of the group, tell you about that. And then I'm going to play a little bit of recordings that I did as I was walking with the group. There you go.
Well, the conference is Big Sky Paranormal Conference in Phillipsburg, Montana. And it is September 30th to October 1st. You get to stay overnight or just come for the day. And you guys get to sleep with some spirits, go ghost hunting, get to listen to paranormal enthusiasts all over Montana as well. From cryptid creatures, UFOs, and just all that. And some ghost hunting.
And it's pretty fun, too.
Yes, it's super fun. And this is our second year doing it.
Do you know how many people you're expecting at the event?
I'm hoping 100. So that last year we had 50, so we're hoping for 100. So, yeah.
Cool. And where would people go to if they were interested in more information, wanted to sign up for this? Where would they go?
You could either go on our Facebook page, which is Bozeman Paranormal Society, or you go onto the BigSkyParanormalCon.com website to also find out more information about tickets.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. This was the third jail here in Bozeman. The first jail was built in 1869 out on Mendenhall. It was made out of log. It was like a log cabin. And then this building was the third jail here in Bozeman. It was built in 1911. In the first year it was built, 6 inmates escaped and they can only find 4. There's also been 3 murderers that were in this building. Only one was hung, and his name was Seth Danner. The other two were hung over where now is La Pria, but used to be Garage Soup and Grill, but they used to use butcher shops back in the day to hang people in the back. So extra spookiness, so, and whatnot. Well, the ghost stories to this building is they have seen Seth Danner, they have felt him. I actually have done, when I've done research here, down in the basement here, there's a tunnel system that comes from here to the courthouse. And they use it to transport the prisoners to their court dates. Anyways, I was down there and I'm what they call an empath, so I feel lots of people's energies. I feel everybody's energies. It's just a thing. But I also feel like spirits. So I kind of like when I'm down there, I always feel kind of anger and remorse. And just lots of regret, sadness, and whatnot. Well, they've also seen what they call a sheriff in here. And then what I mentioned earlier was the 6 inmates escaped. they only could find four. My thought is he's stuck there because he's still looking for these inmates, which makes sense to me and whatnot. There also is a little girl, or a woman, sometimes sounds like a little girl, that is, this hangs out in the front here. We don't know where she comes from. So my theory is with spirits is they love to wander, so they're never bound to their location most of the time, unless there's a reason. But most of the time they're able to wander. So I don't know if it's because of this building next to me. It could be just bound to the street. No idea. But this brings up my first piece of equipment that I get to pass around. Hold on. It's new. So just letting you know. So before I get into the ghost box, it's a radio that scans really, really fast and then it slows it down to their time. So they'll give you answers like, hello. You know, you're just asking pretty much any question you want. Is Seth Danner there? You know, asking basic questions. I love asking them, how was your day? How are you doing? What's going on? You know, just asking basic questions. So it scans really, really fast, and then you guys will notice when it slows it down to their time. I had just a mini panic attack. That was me. I'll start it off. Can you say hello? Hi. That was a clear hi. Three days. This building behind me was built in the 1960s as well, and later on torn down in 1935 and replaced with this Art Deco style thanks to Fred Wilson. This was constructed by Fred Wilson. You'll notice that there's a lot of Fred Wilson buildings throughout our tour. One is the Wilson School, and we're also going to see the Baxter as well. Well, later on when you guys get to look at your packets, you'll see what the building used to look like in the 1860s. It looked like, to me, the Addams Family Mansion. But anyways, it was later torn down here. Well, there is still ghost stories that come through this area with sounds of footsteps. To on the second floor, they will see things move around, like, because there is an old records area. So if you go up to the second floor, there is like cases and they have old artifacts. Well, they do disappear in other parts of the building, like the death records area as well. Sometimes the death records will also disappear and reappear. I know this for a fact because my member at the time used to work for the health department. And she would be up here until like 2 in the morning. This is after when the janitors had left. And she would still hear these sounds and of the footsteps and all the bangs and whatnot as well. So just extra spookiness. You guys get to play with this equipment when we get to a certain part of this tour because I try to entertain. You guys will love this. This building behind me is the Baxter, and it opened March 2nd, 1929, thanks to also Fred Wilson. The thing is, it was named the Baxter Hotel because of George Baxter. George Baxter was a very wealthy rancher here in Bozeman, and he did not think that the Bozeman Hotel was a very high-end hotel, so he decided that he needed the Baxter Hotel and wanted to fund it so then he could have all of his rich friends come and visit him. So now that's why it's called the Baxter Hotel. Well, he also had some other funding as well. You know, the ghost stories of this building are of a ghostly bride who is rumored to move furniture and dishes upstairs in one of the ballrooms, as well as when you descend down the stairs, you will feel like somebody's holding their waist. And I still, to this day, have not found somebody that has gotten married here that has had that experience. But I have had the experience of the dinnerware flying off the shelves because I've had a friend of mine's dad that worked upstairs as a caterer, and have had attendees even have seen the dinnerware fly off, and have seen like the chairs, they would put them away and then come back later, and all of a sudden there's chairs back. It's like, I would just say the part ghost is not done partying, I am sorry. So anyways we're gonna go off to the outlet.
This building is the Allen Theater. It has been built in 1919 when Bozeman boasted a population of 6,000. And it also hosted several different shows, even one with an elephant. They actually had to take out the wall out of the Allen in the back. I know this for a fact because I had somebody attend my tours and they said that there is a weird patch in the back of the Ellen that they definitely looks odd, and it looks like they've had to take it out because of an elephant. So, well, the Story brothers are who own this building, and they did name it after their mother Ellen Story. And the rumors are that they still bought this building. So they do see a man up in the balconies and in the ladies' room. Well, the ladies' room, we are assuming, must have been an office at one point. I did talk to a TV crew that did confirm that with me, and usually spirits help us hang out in familiar areas, and throughout times, that does change. Like, history does change, so there might have not been a ladies' room then at that point, and then later on it was built in that location. And they also would have seen them also in the back, sitting, but then will like have feelings of somebody sitting there, and all of a sudden like they'll look behind them and then there's nobody there. So yeah, it's just extra spooky. So anyways, one last building here is this black building here, is the Chamber Fisher building. It has boasted several different businesses throughout the years, even the bank. So down in the basement I think there is still a vault down there. And when it was a bank especially, they would have the vault open by itself. And also feeling of mist and hearing their employee's name being called down in the basement. So, and they have also seen an elderly man down in the basement as well. So just extra spookinesses and whatnot. So anyways, we're going to go off to the next destination. This building we've actually investigated. This is the Masonic Lodge 6. There also is a Masonic Lodge 18 that we will see later. The Masonic Lodge 6 was built in 1866 and made out of log. And it was also off of Mendenhall as well. We assume that Mendenhall and Maine were mostly the main drags in Bozeman for a while. And during the railroad boom, it ended up moving to this location. And underneath has always boasted several different businesses throughout the years. And then when the Civil War hit, they did have a rift. And this was the Confederate side of the building. And then over by the Union is what the Masonic Lodge 18 is. And that's also where you would find the Eastern Star Group and the Youth Group, which is so funny because we were the only ladies in this building ever. There's still never been any women inside this building. So we thought it would be kind of fun to have all ladies come out to this investigation and see if we could stir up something. I mean, I would anyways. I'm stuck coming to all these anyways. So it's not like I love that anyways. But I would come up here, and the funny thing is that we ended up getting what they call an EVP, which is electronic voice phenomena. So you normally can't hear spirits with your own ears. So you have to use special devices unless you are inclined or special in that way that you can actually hear spirits. I can't. But anyways, we ended up catching an EVP of a woman up here, which could be tied to anything. It could be tied to any of the businesses that are down below, because I did mention that that spirits do wander. But remember, we did have an explosion around 2008-2009. So, and unfortunately, she's still there. I unfortunately really know that she's still there. So, I am on my way of finally clearing her from this spot. So she needs to. Anyway, so it could have been her. So I'm not really too sure. So, but it's just kind of weird. We would have to do more investigations here. It's really hard to get an investigation in a Masonic lodge. It's like really, really hard. There's so much voting involved. It's just really hard. So we'll see what happens.
Well, that's about it for today. Did you recognize any of those places that we visited on the ghost tour? I'll have more of the ghost tour for you next week. And I also want to extend my thanks to Elise with the Bozeman Paranormal Society, and also to the National Park Service for the sounds of the bugle of the elk, and also to Field Notes from Montana Natural History Center. And thank you for listening. As always, you can call me or text me about anything on your mind. The number is 406-404-6246. Remember to spread the word that you can hear this program on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgbm.org at 7 p.m. Sunday and 9 a.m. Monday. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgbm.org website. So that's it for today. So till next time, listeners, be safe, stay well, and sweet dreams. The music taking us out today is called Autumn Waltz. It is from the album Weaving Worlds from Lisa Lynn and Aria Frankfurter. See you next week. Thank you.